Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I'm your host for The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share advice for techies, for earth lovers, and for penny pinchers. As much as I love the sound of my own voice, this broadcast is going to rely heavily on guests who are subject matter experts on everything, ranging from how to get your small business up and running, interviews with some of the brains behind your favorite apps, and even how to remove garbage from outer space. You never know who's going to pop up and join me next in studio, so make sure to subscribe to The Town Hall on iTunes to get our episodes downloaded directly. And if your boss is making you work through lunch or your commute is just too short and you miss something awesome, don't worry, we've got your back. You can check out our blog for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am joined in the studio by one of my favorite people in and outside of the office, Michael Allegretti. Michael is Rubicon's Senior VP of Policy and Strategic Initiatives. Michael and I go way back to when I actually interviewed with him in New York for a position a year ago at Rubicon. And look at us now. The tables have turned. My turn.
I'm thrilled to be here, Amy.
Thank you so much for coming. Michael works out of our New York office, so it's a big deal to have him. So thank you. Let's start small. Your title is ridiculously long, mouthful, and very annoying to say. So before we get into all of the really inventive stuff you're doing, back it up and tell me a little bit about your background and how you got to Rubicon and where we are now.
Well, first I'll say I absolutely love being at Rubicon. It's the one job in my life that brings together all the pieces of what I've been doing really since I was a kid. So my background was in politics. I started as a page in Congress at the ripe young age of 16. And for about 10 years or so, worked on political campaigns, helped some people get elected, lost more than I won. That's the reality. And years later, would actually run for the U.S. House myself. And just to be clear, I lost that race as well. But all of those
defeats, I actually was not going to ask about that, well, but now we're going to go into it.
We're getting deep, Amy. The reality is, you know, working in politics prepares you to create a vision, to bring people together around ideas and around a movement for change. And it helps you learn how to communicate to broad constituencies of folks. So it was a really important part of my life. But around, I think I was about 24, 25, I said, you know, there's more than just politics. There has to be substance behind it. So I went to the Kennedy School of Government to try to really learn about public policy, the actual laws that, you know, govern us and what drives change beyond just big ideas. You know, what are the laws? And spent time working on climate policy at a place called the Climate Group, helped to organize something called the C40, which is a gathering of global mayors around the issue of how you basically drive sustainable development in cities. And that work, both on the environmental side and the city side, really started to help me understand my sweet spot. I care about cities. I care about quality of life. I care about innovation. That took me to a number of cool places before Rubicon, the Manhattan Institute, where we looked deeply at urban policy, and then eventually Uber, where we obviously everyone knows Uber, looked really carefully at how do you build a company in the context of a really tightly regulated city like New York. Here I am now at Rubicon, bringing it all together, the environment, sustainability, cities, fast growth, technology. I just love it.
And what sparked your passion for sustainability? I mean, not everybody, you know, goes green or whatever. So what did that for you?
I'm an outdoors person. My favorite thing to do is to ski, to hike, to run outdoors. And so for me, it's just about conservation more than anything else. How do we conserve what we have? How do we treat it right? You know, I've got a four-year-old boy now and a seven-month-year-old daughter. And I'm not going to say something cheesy like I want to leave the world better for them, though I do. But I just want them to be able to enjoy what I enjoy, which is being outside. And I think that means just acting responsibly in our daily lives, when we're outdoors in nature, when we're at work. So for me, sustainability is about conservation and about just treating the world the way you would want to be treated yourself.
Although I'd love to lock you in here with me and talk about everything, you know, work, non-work related, I did want you to come on here today to talk about Rubicon and our Smart City Initiative. The only other person from the company that I've had on was a co-founder. So we haven't really talked about a lot of the stuff that we're doing. You know, this is a platform for sustainability influencers and for our partners. And so I thought that we would shake it up a bit and do something different and talk about, you know, a piece of tech that is going to change the world. And we're at the forefront of it. Break it down for me. What is a smart city? Give me an example.
I love talking about this.
I know.
Really into smart cities.
I know you are.
Ask 100 people what a smart city is. You're going to get like 75 to 80 different definitions. I try to keep it very simple. It's a city that is interconnected. So all the pieces work together. It's a city that's not working in silos. It's efficient. It's a city that is not just responsive to citizen needs. It's one that's proactive. So rather than a city that fixes a pothole after a citizen calls in or texts in and says, I have a pothole, it's one that knows there's a pothole on that street. We'll get to it in 6 days. And they tell the citizen it's going to happen. So proactive, key part of what a smart city is. And it's one that's cost effective. So, you know, you could have all the greatest tech in the world as a city. You could be super proactive. But if it costs you $1 billion a year to do that, I don't think that's smart. You've got to be cost effective. You can't waste taxpayer dollars. So smart cities for me, attack it from those three angles. And we've built a product at Rubicon that I'm proud to say hits all of those things. It is created, it's purpose built to fulfill that vision.
So I guess the next logical question for me to ask on behalf of the listener would be, how did we and Rubicon make the segue from being a company that predominantly helps businesses manage sustainability and waste aversion to an innovative tech solution for a municipality? I mean, it's quite the jump.
Yes or no? I mean, our mission is to end waste, and it's to end waste in all of its forms. So physical waste, of course, but also wasted time, wasted energy, wasted tax money, wasted money in general. So I saw this, and you know, we saw this collectively, those of us who were thinking about it, as an extension of that mission. But basically, we had tech that we use, and it's great tech that works for our independent haulers, Rubicon Pro. And we said, how can we apply this to another segment of society, right? Because if we're trying to get towards zero waste, you can't get there just by focusing on commercial businesses.
Right.
The whole waste stream. That means households as well. Public waste as well, right? Public waste, households, commercial waste. So we create a product on the back of Rubicon Pro called Rubicon Smart City. And we pilot it and sell it to city governments, as well as to private haulers that work on behalf of city governments. And it helps them become more efficient and effective. So it's all about improving the operations of that fleet. But it's also about collecting lots of data that helps drive more sustainable decision making. You can't go to zero waste if you can't measure where you are now and if you don't have good data. So our tech is out there learning about the waste streams of a city, contamination rates, all the stuff that matters to get a city to go from good to great on recycling.
So if a city's not using a tool like Rubicon Smart City, what are they using now?
Well, then they are not a smart city. They are a learning city. Right now, they're not using much. Some cities are using stuff, technology that helps them manage their fleet a little bit better.
Right.
Some of them, you know, are using reporting platforms that kind of aggregate the amount of recyclable material or regular municipal solid waste that's collected. But no one's bringing both of those things together. No one's analyzing those the way we are. But Amy, something, you know, we call the product Rubicon Smart City. We didn't call it Rubicon, you know, Better Waste. And
right.
I think that's an important segue because the real vision for the product is a garbage truck is a roaming data center. It just hasn't been tapped yet. It's the only vehicle besides a postal truck that goes up and down every street of every city in the world at least once a week. And as such, it can look at everything. So you can start to, as a city leader, better understand your community conditions in real time, every day, or at least once a week. What neighborhoods are going in the wrong direction? How could you figure out where crime might start or where you might start to have issues in terms of dangerous community conditions, vacant homes, graffiti, increased instances of litter, cars that aren't moved a lot? Those are signs that a neighborhood is changing. Or your infrastructure, leaky fire hydrants, broken curbs or curb cuts, lots of potholes. There are different things that the garbage truck could be out there looking for and feeding back to the city government to help the city run more efficiently and have a better quality of life. And that's what we're also doing with Rubicon Smart City.
That's a really great way to put it. But I know that like being on a podcast, it's hard to visualize even for me, and I'm familiar with the solution. So let's play a bit of pretend so that we can all understand exactly how the solution works. And we're really going to have to play pretend here because I'm picturing myself as a garbage truck driver
okay.
for the city of Atlanta.
What do I need to do? What do I do? What can I do? What does the experience for the driver look like? Does it look any different than just riding a normal route?
That's the whole point, really. And I really tip my hat to our tech team, because they build tech products through the eyes of the driver, through the eyes of the waste hauler, not through the eyes of a bunch of, you know, tech folks out in some lab who've never been on the streets.
Right. Cause it could be super intimidating somebody.
That was the whole thing. So we made it, all of our tech operates by the principle of interaction by exception. So basically, if there's nothing wrong, if a garbage bin isn't overflowing, or if there isn't a down power line or some issue, the driver does nothing. They just continue about their route. They log in. They literally log in before they get in the truck. That's one or two steps. And then they drive their route. It is literally that simple. The information is all fed back from an iPhone-based device, and also from something we call the pod, which is an OEM device. It plugs into the computer. You could have one or two of those things if you wanted. And both of those devices feed the information back to a website. Supervisor can watch that website. Theoretically, the general public could watch it if you want to open it up as a city. And it's that simple.
So their supervisors can watch, you know, who's on the route and what they're doing. So
and can help the drivers. I mean, that's the big thing. When you talk about kind of the management of fleets and management of public workforces, too often the conversation is about trying to discipline drivers and trying to change their behavior in a way that is adversarial. Our product is the opposite of that. It's about showing 9 times out of 10 the driver doing the right thing. And it's about helping to make the driver's day more equitable and, frankly, better for the driver and for the city and the residents.
So that was my next question is, you know, now we're still playing pretend and I'm transforming into a government worker managing a fleet. You know, how do I best use the solution? How do I take the data that, you know, the trucks have collected, and how do I begin to innovate and create some of those solutions for my city?
You're a superhero. You're changing here right before my eyes.
I can't believe it.
So data is only as useful as its ability to be analyzed. And its ability to be analyzed is only as useful as how quickly it can come. So we developed a part of Rubicon Smart City. We call them real-time insights. They are, as the name sounds, real-time. Think of it like a post-it note that just kind of rapidly generates throughout the day on your home screen. And we are analyzing information that's coming from the one or two devices in the truck and telling the supervisor in real time, here are changes you can make right now to various drivers' routes or to your whole fleet to improve the day. So that's one way we're doing it. Another way is, and that's the real-time, on-the-ground way, day-to-day. Another big way we do it is through the analysis, right? So after a week, after a month, we'll look at data, we'll analyze it, we'll go back to the city with the city and say, here are the trends we're seeing. You have 7 drivers who are chronically speeding. They're not chronically speeding because they're bad people or bad drivers. They're chronically speeding because they have too many stops compared to everyone else. Let's balance that route. That's an example.
Damn, that's really cool. Rubicon Smart City has been, you know, roaming around the city of Atlanta, I guess you could say. Our headquarters, my hometown. How's that project been going? What are some of the findings that you guys have seen so far?
Well, it's going amazingly. We're in over 20 cities now across the United States, and Atlanta was our first, and it's our hometown. It means a lot to us personally, and we've had great impacts. We had a 6-month period where we piloted the technology and said, okay, what did we accomplish? And the findings were real and they were big. 355 tons of recyclable material that had been going to landfills before our pilot program are no longer going to landfills. They're going to recycling centers and they're being repurposed and reused.
Wow.
And that was an 83% change. And that was driven by looking at the data and changing the behaviors of the drivers. Another big finding was the potential for actual cost savings. So not just changing where the waste goes, but saving the city money. We identified over $700,000 of annual savings through things like route optimization, the balancing of routes, and kind of the rejiggering of the way the trucks go. Carbon savings, of course. So from better driving and fewer routes and better routing, there were carbon savings. Get you the exact number, but we're talking, you know, 4,500, 5,000 carbon equivalent tons.
Wow.
Those are some examples.
Yeah, that's the, you know, that's the Rubicon way. That's what we do is, you know, sustainable and cost effective. So in case you don't believe Michael because of his political background, and I understand that, gotcha, waste dive. And for all you non-trash talkers out there, I certainly didn't know about this publication before I started in the industry, is a prestigious waste trade publication. And they recently also said that Rubicon Smart City is, you know, in more than 20 cities. Tell me a little bit about who some of those cities are and, you know, what's going on with the solutions.
We have great partners in cities, and, you know, where we've gone with the product early really mattered. We wanted to work with city governments that were yearning to be really inventive or willing to experiment and that had really strong city leadership. So besides Atlanta, we're in the consolidated government of Columbus, Georgia, second biggest city in the city of Atlanta,
yeah,
and Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Tyler, Texas, and two major U.S. cities that I can't tell you about just yet.
Fair.
But one of them is affectionately known as the City of Brotherly Love. I'll leave that to your listeners to figure out.
Okay.
We're making great strides in terms of cities across the country. And then we have another basket of cities beyond working just with city governments. We work with private haulers who serve as franchisees. So basically the city says to a private hauler, we would like you to exclusively pick up the residential waste recycling for our city. And we have two great partners, Latham Home Sanitation and Frontier Waste, who are helping us in Georgia and Texas.
That's awesome. Another cool thing that Michael did was speak at Waste Expo this year. If you're not familiar, again, don't feel bad. Certainly didn't know what it was before I started in the industry. It's an insanely massive conference in Vegas, and you spoke last month on the Internet of Things. What does that mean? Talk to me a little bit about how you think the Internet of Things will impact the municipal space in the next few years. Like, what kind of role will Rubicon have in that? I know that's a lot of questions.
Yeah, we're going to be central to it. And I think Internet of Things is an even newer term, like smart city.
Right.
Again, ask 100 people. In this case, you're going to get 99 different answers as to what it means. For me, Internet of Things is truly about connectivity. It's about next generation devices, whether they be stationary ones like Wi-Fi hotspots that sit in various parts of a city, or cameras, or mobile ones like what we have, all talking to one another and improving efficiency and feeding back information to cities. So in many ways, Internet of Things is part of the broader smart cities movement. We're uniquely positioned because our technology is on the back of these roaming data centers, these garbage trucks. We're going to every little crevice of a city. And I think without us as part of the broader solution of a smart city, you can never truly get to 100% capacity. So it's going to be key for us.
I was out to dinner last night. I went out with a couple friends, and one of them is a CPA for Ernst & Young. And we were talking about our schedules for the next day. And I was, you know, not complaining that we had to record this, but I was lamenting about our time together. And I told them I was recording an episode with you for the town hall, which, you know, organically turned into me attempting to explain the smart city tech. And my friend stopped me mid-sentence and told me that I 100% needed to ask you about the taxpayer in this situation. What are the tangible benefits a taxpayer can get from this type of tech?
Your friend is really...
Shout out to Ben.
All right, Ben, that was a great question. So you pay taxes, Ben, presumably. I hope so. And every tax dollar that you spend, part of it is going to your municipal solid waste collection, your recycling collection. And when Rubicon's technology saves the city money on that operation, that indirectly should be saving you money. Your government should be turning around, either cutting your taxes or taking that savings and applying it to some other part of your city, like a library, like a police station, like a fire department. So in a very real sense, we're freeing up government resources that can go to other parts of the city to improve your quality of life. That's one way. Another way, flip it around. In jurisdictions where you pay for what you throw away, a lot of people will throw away more than they pay for. They'll stuff it into the garbage pail. It'll be overflowing. Or they'll run to their neighbor. Hopefully that's you, Ben, because you don't produce that much garbage. And they'll throw their extra garbage in your bin. That's not fair. So our technology is looking for that. It's trying to figure out who are the overproducers of waste, who are the underproducers of waste, and how can we right size what they pay in terms of a fee?
Ben, that was actually a really good question. I wrote it down and I promised him I would ask it, and I'm glad I got the opportunity. Michael, it's your least favorite part. Here we go. You've been around the government for a number of years and you're passionate about solving efficiency problems for governments. We all know this. Anyone who knows you knows this. But what we don't know about you is your favorite movie, your guilty pleasure food, or even your favorite band. So now I'm going to ask you 10 rapid fire questions, and you just say the first thing that comes to your mind. And if you could see his face right now, he is redder than I've ever seen him. And he spoke at Waste Expo in front of 10,000 people, and he's so uncomfortable, and I can't wait.
Now I'm really into this. Let's do it.
I know that there's one question that's off limit, so I won't even go there. And that's what's Michael's reading, because not too much right now. Number one, who is one person you really admire and why?
I adore Margaret Thatcher. I'm obsessed with her. I think she's an amazing woman, incredible leader, and transcends politics.
What does your morning routine look like?
Now that I have two children, there is no morning routine. My boy comes in at 5:45 in the morning, wants to play with Legos. I try to work out while he watches some television and asks me to play with Legos, and eventually I get to work.
What is the best slice of pizza in New York?
Hands down, Nino's on 3rd Avenue and 89th Street in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
Who are you listening to right now?
I'm listening to you right now, but music-wise, I'm listening to a lot of Avicii after his passing.
Where's your favorite place to vacation?
That's going to be a toss-up between the south of France and Pennsylvania. That's a weird
one. Isn't that a weird combination? Weird.
My happy place is in Pennsylvania. My heart is in France.
Okay. Who's the last person that you texted?
Chad Gold.
Our CFO?
Yes.
Okay. What is your guilty pleasure food?
See pizza.
Okay. You work really, really hard. Actually, harder than anyone I know. When you do take time off, what does a typical weekend or day off look like for you?
Well, if it's a weekend.
And when's the last time you took one?
No. It's important to work hard and play hard. I ski every chance I get. And that could be for a day, that could be for a weekend. But I just got back from Spain, so I actually did get a little time off.
There you go. Where's your favorite place to ski?
Jackson Hole. I named my son after. I really didn't, actually, but I told him that. His name is Jackson.
Middle name Hole?
No, but he sometimes says that.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. What is one eco-responsible action that you incorporate into your everyday life?
Straws. Getting straws out of the house.
Yeah, I was going to say. You need to clarify.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Do you use the reusable ones or is it just no straws?
No, we're going cold turkey on straws. We're doing reusable cups. Well, obviously, just regular cups.
Yeah, just cups.
We're just going right for cups.
What does success mean to you?
It means balancing family and professional ambition and health.
Michael, I cannot thank you enough for taking that hour with me in New York a year ago and an hour with me in Atlanta today. You're a very special person to me and this company. And so thank you so much for hopping on today.
I'm thrilled you're here, Amy. Thank you for having me.
Awesome.